Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We are several days now into the search for Nancy Guthrie. As we are recording this, she has not been found. I can only hope and pray that by the time you do see this, maybe that has changed. But just so you know, we're discussing it from this perspective of what we know at this moment in time. Law enforcement has released an official timeline showing her doorbell camera disconnected at 1:47 a.m. Software detected a person at 2:12 a.m. with no video available, and her pacemaker app disconnected from her phone at about 2:28 a.m. That's the digital footprint that we understand publicly at this moment in time. That the authorities have released. The sheriff has denied reports of forced entry and says no cameras were smashed or destroyed, contrary to other reporting that some outlets have done thus far. Interesting. Purported ransom notes were sent to media outlets, not the family. And the FBI says no proof of life has been provided and no follow-up communication has come in as of yet. One arrest has already been made for an imposter ransom demand. To understand the chaos of this, what these behavioral patterns reveal, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. There's a lot to unpack. Let's start with the doorbell camera disconnecting at 1:47 a.m. Software detecting the person at 2:12, and 25 minutes later, Nancy's pacemaker disconnecting from her phone at 2:28 a.m. That is a 41-minute window from the first sign of intrusion, if we're to understand that there was some sort of signal that was registered on that Ring camera or the Nest camera up until that 2:28 time mark of basically her watch disconnecting from her pacemaker. Basically out of Bluetooth range is what that is telling you. What does that pace tell you about how this person operated, their level of planning, their comfort in the environment, whether this was someone who'd been there before? 40 minutes, it seems, at the property, at the very least.
Yeah, they were moving with a purpose, it seemed like. And I mean, just that kind of intricacy of knowing what needed to be done to try to cover footprints really says this was planned out. And when you look at these types of cases where it's, and again, that's where I think we got a two-prong attack when it comes to the investigation. Was it an intentional abduction case or was it a home invasion robbery gone sideways? And yeah. The stats are still playing out, even with this. When they put out the timeline, the sheriff gave that great press briefing not too long ago. As of this recording, I was originally like, "Oh my gosh, was it targeted for abduction?" But when you really plug those numbers back in and you look at the stats are still saying that it is a robbery, home invasion gone sideways, and the panic that happens. In when it goes sideways of taking her, I think I'm holding to, I think that's what this is. If we're only based on the laws of probability of what we know in the public right now, but a lot of planning went in because they knew about, from what we are observing, they knew about Ring cams. They didn't smash them. They removed them. The pacemaker issue and her medication, I think, is going to be really key. And that, I think they know that whether any was taken with her or not, because in all these cases, and whether it's this case or other cases we've covered, Tony, the probability that it's a known entity, either 1 degree or 2 degrees of separation from her, that's what they're doing right now. They're identifying all the people that were aware of her location, and more importantly, as we're seeing from this timeline, aware of her routine. And so that's what they're really zeroing in on.
I'm going to say this, because it's not something that I think I've really heard floated out there much yet. But this is being treated as a kidnapping, basically.
Yeah,
we don't even know that.
Yeah,
honestly, I mean, unless there's something that tells us she got out of there alive, which, as far as we understand right now, we don't have that. If there's no camera out, if there's nothing that we know that she left, that she was not there, and that we saw with our own eyes, Brian Enten's reporting with News Nation. We saw it. There was blood right outside of the door when they, for whatever reason, opened the scene. And we'll talk about that too. The assumption that she was kidnapped is there. And that's the thing that makes it so weird, and that's what everybody looks at going, the odds of someone abducting an 84-year-old woman. I understand the area where the celebrity of Savannah, maybe it is something of that connection there, or does it make more logical sense, and statistic-wise, that this was a home invasion gone wrong? And I hate to say it, but did Nancy Guthrie not leave that house alive?
Yeah,
and then it's more of a body cover up, and it's a concealing of the crime. It's not an abduction.
That's what the stats are leaning towards.
Yeah.
So there is less. I mean, just think about these. And the reason why what behavior people do is we look at laws of averages to kind of create filters for where we're going to focus our efforts. So here's law enforcement getting hundreds, if not thousands, of leads in, some fictional, some real, some deep fakes, whatever it is. And so you have to create filters. And one way you create filters is you look at averages over periods of time. And here's the averages for an abduction. There are less than or right around 100 abductions a year for ransom in the entire country. And if you look at, and that sounds like it might be a lot, but if you look at the fact that the number of homicides there are a year that are not covered by media at all, or even solved, we're talking in the mid to high thousands, tens of thousands sometimes of homicides. I mean, there's a lot of crime out there that isn't covered because it doesn't reach the level of interesting to people, right?
Yeah.
And so this one, think about it. There's less than 100 abductions a year for ransom. And out of all those abductions, the vast majority, like 99% of them, are family related, childcare, child custody related, or child trafficking related. So that then reduces it even more. And then when you add on top of it her age and also the notoriety, it reduces it even more. This is such, if it was a targeted abduction, and again, it could be because that's how stats are made, because there's outliers. If this is like some people are thinking it is such an extreme outlier, which would be this is why we're in uncharted kind of chaotic territory, because this is a big, weird outlier. Matter of fact, if we hadn't had any ransom thing coming at all, I'd say this is just a home invasion, but this was a home invasion gone sideways. And under the heat of the moment, things went sideways and they took the body. They took her alive, whatever it was, because of fear, didn't know what to do, and they freaked out. Which
can happen. If it wasn't Savannah Guthrie's mother, would we be having that? I'm not in any way saying that as a negative. I'm saying it as the celebrity aspect of it. If there wasn't that aspect of it, a celebrity, someone took the loved one of them. It must be for money. It must be a kidnapping. It's kind of our knee jerk reaction. That's like what we've been trained to think in movies and in real life. I mean, this has happened before. But if it wasn't, if it was just, whoever, someone who was not well known, would we be thinking abduction?
It's a fair point, a fair question. I still think it would be, get this very similar coverage only because it is so rare and so unusual, and media typically picks up on things that are rare and unusual, especially in the area of true crime like this.
But would we be thinking abduction, or would we be more on were they murdered and taken out of the house?
Yeah, I'm telling you, I think the only thing that made it abduction related is the fact that there's this ransom stuff that's come in.
And now but for the first 48, 72 hours, there wasn't. And everybody was saying abduction,
That's why I'm still leaning away from not being targeted abduction. I think it was abduction after the fact is what I'm thinking. Yep. And here's why. The only thing that gave me even pause on that was and not even as much anymore, is they said the one that came into TMZ also, just the probability of a ransom coming in through media is not what they do. You know, it's not what abductors do. As rare as abductions are, that's not the way you typically deliver a ransom note, unless it's for criminal notoriety. It's a look at me moment. But we're not having a manifesto. We're not having a look at me moment yet. That's why everything is completely sideways from what we're expecting. And when it is, in other words, when the reality doesn't fit the narrative that we are thinking it will be with abduction, you just got to go back to what the baseline stats are telling you was the highest probability, and that's what investigators are following up. The only thing, I'm sorry, Tony, one last thing. Only thing with the ransom that gave me pause to still have it in my mind is when they said there was a lot of details there that would have been unknown to anyone that was trying to do a deep fake on it. With the exception of if this was someone that knew the house and was targeting, they would know some of those details already, because the only thing that they leaked out was they knew about her Apple Watch and they knew about a floodlight outside. There might be some other details in there, but that would be known by anyone that was in a circle around her too.
That'd be known by anyone who knows she's a homeowner and you're taking a guess that she has an Apple Watch. You know what I mean? And she's been on social media there's a lot of things that you can glean, you know, and then take a wild guess that the odds are they're there. And I imagine if you're listing off just for example, we haven't seen the note, so don't anybody take it like that. Yep. But if you were to list off like 20 things and let's say you hit 10, that's going to be deemed a fairly credible note still. As long as you're not like super detailed on it, and it's like, you know, and the odds of hitting that will probably be not that hard to do. I get the end of this happens. You're going to get fake things like this that are going to come in. The sheriff has explicitly denied reports of forced entry and says that no cameras were smashed or destroyed. The doorbell camera was disconnected, apparently not broken. I'm interested in this because there's been some weird, this whole thing has felt weird from the beginning. And weird doesn't necessarily mean, you know, something nefarious or wrong. It can just mean incompetence. It can mean, you know, we're not used to doing an investigation like this, and there's hiccups along the way. But that to me has been a little weird. I mean, I trust Ashley's reporting. I do. And I trust Brian's reporting. And if you're going to go and publicly and say you got a source that says this or that, it's usually coming from somewhere. I don't think she was pulling that one off of like Reddit or something of that nature and running with it. And now I'm not saying I agree with the assumptions or what some of the headlines were. Especially when it comes to the individuals, but there's a stark difference between what some of the reporting has been and what he's saying, but there's also been stark questions in judgment from this office as well. Like, I don't know, releasing the crime scene within 20, 48 hours of it happening and reporters traipsing around it. So I don't know. What's your take on all this?
Yeah, so the releasing the crime scene and going back in is pretty common.
Yeah.
Because when you have different agencies start getting involved, they're going to be looking for different things in a different way.
But it's active scene. I mean, they didn't find her yet.
No, well, I'm saying it's common.
It's common. Okay, I hear you.
There's a big difference between...
Yeah, okay.
Right. There's a big difference between they should or shouldn't, and it's common. Common just means it happens pretty frequently.
Sure.
And it could be missteps. I mean, I thought the sheriff did a decent job of explaining that during the presser today.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. And here's how it makes sense. So should he have kept it locked down? Yes, he really should have, because as you know, this is going to keep escalating. You're going to want to maintain that control of that. So it doesn't happen in other cases like we have where people corrupt sites And then it ruins it. So, I mean, just having Brian Enten on the front steps, being able to look at blood on the deck, I mean, that should not happen yet.
So,
and the sheriff, I thought, did a good job. And that's why I'm always assessing all the information we get, who we're getting from. I think he's done a good job being transparent and owning his behavior. He's got reps doing these types of things.
Yeah.
Because he said, hey, I'll take that and I'll do better next time. He goes, you know, we Monday morning quarterback, all this stuff, I will get better. So I like he didn't explain it away or rationalize it. He just owned it and said, all right, we're moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so that aspect of it was not weird to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't what I really think, because we've said it a few times already, and that this is a very strange thing. And I think when things are strange, you have cops, you have investigators, whether it's local or federal, that when you don't see things that have happened the same way before that you have reps in, it's creating a whole new paradigm on how to go about doing things. And I think this is one of these cases in point here.
And how much game of telephone is going on between all these agencies that are on it right now? Because, I mean, there's a lot that more than you guys normally would get, obviously, now with even more resources being open from the federal government on this. How much of a game of telephone is this between these agencies where, you know, one agency was there to witness the crime scene when only one was there to do it. So it's okay. Here's what we saw. And then that one tells this agency over here, and it goes to this one and that one. And by the time you're done, the cameras are broken. And you know, the story has changed a little bit. And it's not that anybody was like trying to screw it up, but then you have one that's going to, you know, be a source to Ashley or whoever. And then the story is a little different than what it is. Is that maybe what's going on here, while we have kind of some discrepancies and some fairly big pieces of evidence so far?
Yeah, the game of telephone is definitely most likely a part of it. Yeah. So what I'm always looking for is who's in charge. Are they maintaining the same central, you know, focal point of the hub of the spoke of the wheel?
Yeah.
And right now, the sheriff, I think, has done a good job of saying, just by his behavior, he hasn't stated it, but he has, you know, lightly, he's in charge and it's their local jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And he is getting support from all these agencies that he hasn't reached out for. They called in. So the big thing is at the executive level is where the friction could potentially start happening, is where the he said, she said start battling for optics and battling for looks. But what's good, though, is at the grassroots level, where the people are actually doing the righteous work on the grounds, at least the Bureau, the Critical Incidents Response Group that was dispatched to the site on behalf of the Bureau, those people are very used to being in support roles. They're not there to take over. They're not there to create chaos. They're there to support the lead investigators, which is the locals, which is the sheriff and his people. So My feeling and tenor I'm getting, you know, my wobbles and arcs from people that I'm always reading, is that it's being done well from the sheriff and at that grassroots collection level. Are there going to be hiccups along the way? Yes. Actually, if we're going to compare something that was unusual for a town and community, you know, let's look at the Koberger case when that first broke and that first started happening.
Yeah.
There was a lot more missteps, I think, in communication with that when it started than this.
And there was also pleasant surprises later in that case as well, when we got to learn, so there was a little more method to the madness. There were certainly areas where it was pure madness, but there was more. And that's what I think a lot of times people do forget is that quite often, or at least 50-50, I'll say 50-50, there is method to the madness behind the scenes, and there is more going on than far more than you know. And there's reasons for that silence. That's how investigations work. I think the public gets skeptic because there's been a lot of cases, if they're paying attention, that they watch and they had that faith. And then at the end of the day, the curtain's pulled back and you're like, oh, that's all you were doing?
Right.
And then that faith goes away. And it's kind of luck of the draw as far as who you have, you know, on your side looking into this.
And rightly so. And that's why every time we have a case like this break, the first thing I'm always looking for is I'm always looking at the press briefings, because what I'm getting from the press briefings is I want to see the front person. I want to see their demeanor. I want to see their tempo. I want to see their transparency. I want to see their communication style. I want to see their knowledge and depth of field from past cases to this case. And the tenor and arc I'm getting listening to the sheriff, I feel good about this investigation. And the great thing, Tony, is that you and I on the show, we are very critical in a lot of cases of how things are covered. But as of right now, I'm fairly confident of what's going on in the way of investigation. They're holding a lot of information back. I'm just watching and observing what he's sharing very tactically, very strategically. I think there's a lot more known here than is being shared with the public. And they say there's no suspects. There's no one that's under suspicion or anything like that. But here's what's going on behind the scenes. You have the detectives that have all these filters we're talking about, and based on their filters, based on their initial interviews, based on everything, they've probably narrowed a broad net field down to a few smaller nets. Mm-hmm. And so what they're now doing is now before they get distracted by the noise, because what we do on the outside is we create a lot of noise, mm-hmm. you know, noise with abduction, noise with ransom notes, all this crap out here. And they've got to follow those leads then. But I think these investigators have created these smaller nets out of that large net that they're really focusing on right now to keep narrowing it down, keep narrowing it down. And they're doing this in a few primary ways. As the sheriff said, you got to wait for the forensics and the digital evidence to be analyzed and come in. All the technical side, all the gadgets and gurus, they got to do their side. But the side that you marry that up with is all the interviews. The interviews mm-hmm. is where everything always happens. It'll always be the bread and butter of everything because technology and techniques and all the digital stuff, it gives you the tips and leads and ultimately convictions if that's what it comes down to. But it gives you the tips and leads to talk to the human being that actually has the knowledge, has the context, has all these tendrils that digital stuff will never pick up. So it's always the digital supports the human element of this. And so while they're waiting on digital, they are deep diving on the human element. So the Bureau, I know, is providing interviewers. All these agencies are providing interviewers. And what they're doing in these interviewers is like you and I talk about all the time. They're looking for unhealthy relationships. Mm-hmm. They're looking for wobbles and arcs. And they're talking to people. I mean, just like in the Koberger case, you know, if you talk to his coworkers after he committed those murders, there is a wobble, a deviation from his standard behavior. He all of a sudden became happy. Oh my God. You know, and so same thing here. So when they're interviewing people, the seasoned interviewers and investigators are looking for patterns. They're looking for healthy versus unhealthy because happy people don't do bad things. And so they're looking for unhappy people because not all unhappy people do bad things, but that's where we're going to really focus our attention on. What's that mean to them? So that's what I think is going on behind the scenes. As you can tell, a lot of words means a lot of work.
Yeah, my goodness. And there's a lot, and I want to get into that area of it here in our next segment. I want to get your thoughts in the comments section. If you've not already weighed in, you can do that on YouTube, on our channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, or on our Substack, hiddenkillers.substack.com. The link is in the description to weigh in on this case. And be sure to press subscribe or whatever it is you are listening or watching us at. As the investigation into Nancy Guthrie's disappearance intensifies, the FBI is now jointly working the case with the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Agents carrying forensic extraction devices have been photographed entering the home of Nancy's daughter, Annie, and her husband. The last people to see Nancy before her disappearance, the sheriff has pushed back hard on media reports naming potential suspects, calling it reckless to report that someone is a suspect when they could very well be a victim. More than 100 investigators are working the case. Tips are flooding in, and the behavioral landscape is getting more complex by the hour. To help us understand the investigators' read and how they are reading people in the victim's orbit without jumping to conclusions, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us. And this is your latest book. It's not all about me. But what would you got? I think there might be ones that are a little more applicable to this.
Sizing people up. So,
yeah. And of course, it's at the very bottom of my pile. It's
right there.
This one.
There you
go. This will help you understand it a little bit more. But let's talk about this and from a behavioral standpoint. In our last segment, we were discussing how they're breaking this down into the investigation, how they're kind of going about looking at who needs some looking at. And we talked about the different nets that they're casting, from a very wide one now to probably several smaller ones. Give me an idea. Who's in those nets? What's in those nets right now? I mean, it still is several, entities or folks that would be in those nets. But in general terms, who are they going to be looking at closely?
Well, the first thing you do is you go towards where the stats and averages say. You start looking at immediate family first. And you start, because what investigators are doing is they are being diligent to rule people out, because you'll find who the bad guy is when you find who it's not. And so it's a lot easier to prove that. And Elizabeth Smart's father was on TV a bunch of times today talking about, some of the most grueling things he went through when his daughter went missing was him being a suspect. For at least a couple of days as they're ruling him out. And so that's what they're doing, is that's what investigators do. Because when you look at that averages, and you look at the net, it's always going to be close concentric circle first. And so they're going to interview all those people that have direct access to her. And then from there, they start going out. And what you're doing is you're not just finding out about them, how they felt about their mother or their coworker or someone that was surrounding her, her aides, whatever it is. And you're also finding out, well, who did she interact with? Who did, who's in her life? Who didn't like her? Who had an issue with her? And it could be, and this is where it's really, really tricky with very, very good people. I mean, it's kind of like, when you're thinking about the Reiners, such good, empathetic people that are all about family. Same thing here. You're seeing such a beautiful, close-knit family. It's going to be very hard to see when someone's emanating a lot of empathy towards others who might not be reciprocal in that. And it might not even be close enough we've seen this in other cases. The likelihood and probability of this being someone that had a loose affiliation with someone that was in and out of that house from time to time is the most likely probability, not someone that might even have known her, but know someone who knows her. And so that's what investigators are trying to do, because that's where the most likely probability of this is, because at least it had to be someone that had enough knowledge of her, had enough knowledge of her routine, the house, whatever security systems she had, to be close enough, blend into an environment where it's kind of in the middle of nowhere-ish, to the extent where they're going to be not observed in plain sight and stand out. In other words, they had to blend in enough not to be an anomaly, not to be a wobble. And that's what they're spending their time doing right now.
What about, this is something I know a lot of people are dealing with this, have dealt with this, elder care, for your loved ones. When you can't be there, there's industries for this now, obviously, where it's at home care, where someone can, depending on your needs, go and check on you. There's live in, there's all different things. I don't know the dynamics of everything that was going on within Nancy Guthrie's home, but obviously she was an 84-year-old woman with limited mobility. I would guess, maybe there's some folks coming in and checking on her that are, in the elder care industry. I couldn't tell you what, because I would just be purely speculating. But from my own, I can't say my own personal, well, actually I can say from my own personal experiences with my grandparents, what I've heard from, many people who've experienced this world, sometimes you got great folks. Sometimes you're like, who hired you? And if you're using a service, that sometimes is kind of going from a pool of people, it's not always the same persons that's coming and going from a home. You don't always know who you're getting and what their background may be and what their intent may be. I would imagine that all of that's got to be being looked at just as strongly as anyone familial-wise, wouldn't they?
100%. And they're going to regard everyone exactly the same. It's just concentric degrees of separation is what they're going to do. You start at the center and you just start working out. And the way you find those circles as concentric circles going out is by talking to the people at the inner circle first. Mm-hmm. And also by doing the digital extractions, because there might have been people in her life that the family wasn't aware of. And that's why you're doing all the digital extraction as well. And as you're then collecting evidence around the property. So here's, you know, here's some conjecture on what they're hopefully able to garner around this property, is that if someone was surveilling this house in any way, there's going to be some evidence of that, hopefully, whether it's DNA, trash, something. Mm-hmm. And the fact that if we're following those averages, that this was a situation where it was a home invasion robbery gone sideways, that meant chaos ensued. And dumb things happen, and people do dumb things when it happens. You leave things. I mean, hell, Koberger left a knife sheaf.
Yeah.
You know, when things go sideways from your plan. So they should be able to have more than, I guarantee they have more than they're saying.
And you have to really take a look at motivation here too. You know, what would motivate someone to do this? I mean, if it's ransom, and then we've talked about that in our previous segment. Number one, it's insanely rare that this happens. And number two, how often is it even successful that someone pays the ransom and they're never caught? I mean, I'm sure it happens sometimes, but I mean, just it's such a low modality path. And your odds of it working in your favor at the end of the day, like, require like super villain level of capabilities. I mean, and I don't think so. If that's it, I mean, then we're talking about something completely different going on here, which who the hell knows anymore. But if you're looking more so at motivation, the motivation to me of taking her out of that home is to get rid of any evidence that may be on said body, okay, of oneself, under fingernails, DNA, things of that nature, if there was some sort of a fight. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why she's not there. I hate to say it, and I hope to God I'm wrong, but I don't really see any other motivation. I mean, if these, because again, and the bounties, all
Bureau
of that.
Bureau put 50,000 out for.
Yeah, I mean, and great. I mean, that was weird that it took that many days for anything to be on it, but.
Government's got to take time to approve stuff.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. But initially it was like 2,500. I'm like, I've seen more for a cat. Take all that out of the equation. There's not a lot that makes sense here. There's not a lot that makes sense either very simple. And if it's not very simple, I feel like it's very grand.
So
like,
my curiosity on this, I keep going back to, when things get complicated, you just got to go back to the simple, because it's easy to spin out of control when you don't have data, and we can go all down these different paths.
Yeah.
But the greatest probability of what happened, sadly, is what you're saying, is that it was a home invasion robbery that went sideways because she fought back and they weren't anticipating it. Something happened, whatever the case is, because here you have someone who's elderly, elder abuse, looks like an easy, safe target, has money, might not have even known who she was necessarily, or because, I mean, so, I mean, think about this. If you were targeting someone to rob, mm-hmm, this would be the last target you wanted to do if you knew the background of the family, because the probability of this being exposed was really, really high.
Yeah, like, you want publicity, you want to be found. Guess what?
and so now, if it was for notoriety, so here's what's also strange. It's why it doesn't fit that pattern, because if it was for criminal notoriety, they had a manifesto, they had a message, they had something to say. Where is it? There's nothing. So, I mean, there's no note, there's no manifesto that was made public. I mean, it'd be very easy for someone that had some weird intention that they wanted to make some statement to the world, or political statement or something, to put something on YouTube and say what they, I mean, see what I mean? There's lots of ways that they could make it happen if they were doing it for the criminal notoriety side of it, rather than just, I don't say just because it's not diminishing it, but then a home invasion robbery that went sideways, and they just needed to get rid of the evidence because they didn't know what to do.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think we're going to know more. No, when I heard they brought in, when they went back in and they brought dogs, canines in, canines add a very good layer of investigation here, I think, because you're going to have cells, you're going to have sense.
Let me ask you this though. If home invasion gone wrong, what if there's nothing taken? I mean, I suppose, you know, you could panic, you know, you killed somebody or someone's severely injured, and your interest is no longer taking things. It's just get the body out of here.
Right.
Or I don't know, you're there for the purpose of taking things. If there's no one there to stop you anymore, wouldn't you take more? I don't know. I'm not in the business of home invasions and robberies. But I wonder what the stats would be on something like that. I don't know if there would be a stats on something like that.
That's why the one thing I did look up, because when you think about how elderly are typically taken advantage of, it's typically at gunpoint, they bring them to the ATM machine and say, all right, put in your PIN number and give me all your cash. I don't know. Maybe they showed up and there was nothing in the house that they thought was going to be in the house, or we're completely wrong, because again, there's it fits a pattern until it doesn't. There's so many weird things in this. That's why people are kind of grasping at it, because it fits a pattern for the home invasion, except there was nothing taken. Huh, that's odd.
Well,
but
I mean,
planned out.
Are we going to find out that there was? I mean, look, there's still things that we don't know about. It's strange sometimes what is released and what is not, and the reasoning for it at the time sometimes just doesn't make sense when it's looked back on in retrospect, but in the time they did it, there was a reason. So there's a lot of things we just don't know.
Just a good visual way to kind of visualize this. For all the possibilities this is, they're all in here. It's like, it could be this, could be this, could be this, could be this, right?
Yeah.
The probability of it being a abduction for ransom as the primary motive is way out here.
Yeah.
So we have here, 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 and then this one way out here. But people get so fascinated by this one out here because it's unusual. It's strange.
The and there's an element to it of the ransom for notice gives us a little bit of hope. Because I don't know that the alternative does.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, if it was that, what we should be seeing in the next day or so, hopefully, is her show up someplace that she was left and good to go. But that's and when the family put out the messaging, they did a fantastic job of playing on empathy, playing towards emotions. Susanna calling her mommy. I mean, that was powerful words. We're here to listen to you. So if this is someone with a grievance or a grudge, you know, saying, hey, we're going to hear your words. I mean, it's very, very well done, the things that were said, which is effective if you're playing on someone or someone in that circle that actually isn't psychopathic.
Yeah. And, you know, and why not put that out and pull that lever?
There's
nothing
message
to lose. Yeah. I mean, and God, I hope this doesn't end horribly. But
no one deserves that.
Yeah. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube, and our Substack, the links are in the description. We'll continue that conversation, there on this case. Let's talk about this one. The autopsy results in the McKee case dropped, and they tell a brutal story. 16 gunshot wounds between two victims. Spencer Tepe shot 7 times, including wounds to his head, neck, chest, and defensive injuries to his hand, arm, that suggest he may have been trying to shield his wife. Monique Tepe shot 9 times, including once in the face, and the coroner confirmed she was shot at also close range. Both died within seconds to minutes. The shooter emptied what appears to be a full magazine and walked out, leaving the two young children sleeping feet away. If the allegations are true, this wasn't an impulsive, violent act. This was the culmination of an 8-year obsession, complete with pre-offensive surveillance, stolen license plates, and a phone that went dark during the murder window. Former FBI Special Agent Robin Drake, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us to help break down this. All of that. The autopsy confirms Monique shot 9 times, including once in the right cheek, and that she was shot at close range. Spencer shot 7, but at intermediate range. What does that tell you about what was going on in that shooter's mind? We see it, you know, with knives and stabbings a lot. That's a very intimate crime. You can have an intimate crime with weapons too.
Yeah. And I guarantee you, if he had more rounds, it would have been, if he had more rounds, they would have been in them.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever seen a case of a bigger grievance collector and rage induced melee than this. It's shocking and abhorrent, but I'm not surprised because all the behaviors that this guy has had, if he's guilty, for 8 years was leading to this. His ability to compartmentalize his life is also, they're going to write a book on that one because it was so, he kept this in such a box and it was in all that, you can feel that rage and just what mm-hmm. he did to her and to him with the gunshots, with the stabbings, with everything. He was so obsessed and it was never, ever going to go away. There's nothing that could satisfy that. Matter of fact, I guarantee you, if he could do it again, he'd do it again worse.
You know, and it's interesting that someone was able to hold that rage back for those 8 years, that something else didn't trigger it. Like, what was the trigger here? Because if you have this pent up, she should be mine type, you know, obsession going on in your life, wouldn't her, I don't know, getting engaged, getting married, having kids. I mean, I could just think to see all these other milestones in her life that would, I don't know, maybe have been more of a crescendo moment for that type of a thinking rather than, I don't know, just around the holidays of 2025. I don't know. I mean, maybe there was something else that was going on. I'm wondering how he was able to kind of keep right in at about 70 through the last 8 years, and then suddenly he gunned it to 120. And I do have a thought I want to throw your way that just kind of came to me as we were talking. You said rage, and I was thinking earlier, and a lot of people have commented on this, maybe you've noticed too, his pictures, even fairly recently, not that long ago, on his dating profiles, like a year or so ago, his facial structure looks very different. The new look, one may throw out there the term roids, steroids.
I knew where you're going with it.
When you said the word rage, I thought the word roids. You say rage, I say roids. You say, you know, and then we'll go back and forth like we're, you know, Diddy's son at a concert recently going bad boy and nobody would go along with it. Huh? I wonder why. That's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if the face, if all that, I'm not a steroid user. I don't know how to speak to it, but I know that that has been a thing for folks. I can't scientifically or in any way expert speak to it, but it does come to mind.
So what that would do, it'd be kerosene on the fire that was already burning regardless.
And that seems to be kind of what he was at the fire.
Yeah.
He wasn't operating at five.
And think about this. And so you wonder what it was. It was no one thing. I love using the reservoir as an analogy all the time, as a metaphor. And so say you have a reservoir that's 8 years, that let's use the number 8. The volume of the reservoir, because at 8 years is when the reservoir spilled over. Mm-hmm. And so he's got a reservoir of grievances. And that reservoir of grievances gets filled at different times. I mean, if you have a deluge of water, the reservoir is going to get filled faster. If you have a deluge of information and he's taken in of what he's perceiving as grievances, her getting married, her being happy, a photograph, whatever it is, that reservoir is going to keep getting filled at different speeds. Mm-hmm. But it never, ever empties. Yeah. And so as one comes, that's why they're collectors. Collectors don't get rid of collections. And he is a grievance collector. So every new thing that happened just kept filling that reservoir until it reached the top. And it could have been something very, very simple. Because once it spills, it spills. It could have been just a very small thing. It doesn't have to be a critical thing. But that one little thing tipped it over the top of the reservoir. The dam cracked and out it all came. And that's what we saw manifest.
when that happens with somebody like this, like the grievance collector, and the dam's broken, do they look back on that and go, God, yeah, I really, you know, I was acting impulsively. I was acting crazily because, you know, I was afraid it was all going to break, and then it broke. You know, do they look back on any of those actions with regret, or is it just on to the next thing? And like, yeah, that was the previous, you know, dam that broke. We'll do better next time. And it wasn't my fault. You know, she kept putting shit into it. She kept filling it with this and this. So it's her fault that my dam broke. It's because she was filling it with her life, with existing.
Mm-hmm. No, they never fix because. Yeah. So, I mean, think about this. For 8 years and even before that, this is his core identity. This is who he is. Yeah. And there's no regret over anything he did. His only regret is that he should have done it better so he wouldn't have gotten caught.
Yeah.
So there is no regret. There's no admitting anything. I mean, this is as a human being, we have such a Robert Greene. We've referenced him many times. The laws of human nature is we have a very, very difficult, if not impossible task. If we want to try to negate what we see ourselves as our self-identity, and he self-identifies as this. Now, he doesn't call himself a grievance collector or a wound collector or any of these things, but that's what he is at his core. And so for him to let go of that, it ain't happening. And so this is his core identity of who he is. And so he will, and because he is a part of this persona, is he is the ultimate control freak. And he will never let go of that control because it's his.
So what does he do now? He got the ultimate control. If it's him again, if it's him allegedly, blah blah
right.
blah. He killed her. They're dead. Now what? Now, I mean, he got the ultimate control. Is it like a big letdown for him at this point? Or, I mean, I'm guessing he's looking back at this as a happy memory where he probably replays this in his head and whatever. Yeah. And finds joy out of this. But mm-hmm. Okay, this has been your identity for the last 8 years of being wronged by this woman, and now you finally got her, you big boy. I mean, what? So now what? Like, I'm wondering how that mind continues forward. Is it just like bask in its glory? I mean, that gets old at some point.
Yeah, I mean, so it's never the finish line that we enjoy. It's actually the journey to the finish line. And so yeah. He fell in love with the process every day of hate, of collecting his grievance. And so he crossed that finish line thinking it would make him happy and whole.
Yeah.
But no, it's an empty feeling at this point. So what do you think he's going to do? He's going to start collecting grievances against everyone else. Like woe be it anyone in his life. I mean, so he'll either cycle through, matter of fact, he'll probably have a sequence of people he cycles through. It's going to be attorneys. It's going to be people in jail with him. There will always be someone he's doing this to because it's part of his identity. My mm-hmm. identity is to collect grievances against you. And because I'm so much smarter than you, I'm right. And the old adage is that people think they need to go on vacation so they can get away from life and get away from themselves. But the problem is you bring yourself on vacation. So vacation doesn't fix anything. You're still the same ass that you were before you left. And same thing here. He thinks he's going to fix himself or get better or feel better and feel whole because I just did this thing. No, he crossed one finish line. He's going to pick another race to run. And he probably isn't even aware of it. It's just a core of who he is and his personality. He's going to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
because why wouldn't he?
Well, I mean, he seems to know no end. I mean, no end. I mean, and it's something where it's benefited him in life in terms of the drive that it took him to get to be a vascular surgeon. I mean, mm-hmm. that's no easy feat. You know, so the engine. He's an example of the engine that could be used for good. What, you know, whatever, you know, personality disordered engine that is, you know, that it could be used for good, but can also be used for complete evil and can drive a person nuts if not, you know, under control, where he sits there and just ruminates on shit. And you can ruminate on good shit and have a lovely life, too. But he chose not that.
He took all his bandwidth and decided to go negative with it. I mean, just yeah. So I mean, everything he's done in life took a lot of energy, took a lot of reps. It took a lot of everything. Yeah. And he decided to pour it all into negative energy. And I don't see it going anywhere. He's just going to continue to repeat that pattern. So here's a good thing for everyone that survives him, I think. When it comes to feeling, you know, justification, he will always be miserable. Good.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think he will ever have a happy day?
You know,
I think he's incapable.
I do. And I think it maybe it'll happen at some point when there's nothing left that he can control. If he ever has that realization, if he ever has it, sitting in that cell by himself, and there's nothing in control, but there's also nothing coming at him that he needs. There's nothing he needs to impress anymore. There's nothing when all of it that's gone, when ego's gone, when there's no expectation of you of doing anything remotely good with your life, it's just everything is gone.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be his peace, because there won't be any weight whatsoever. Yeah. Because he's someone who clearly couldn't distinguish between, you know, a grain of sand and a 100-pound, you know, dumbbell. Yeah. Everything was met with the same level of intensity, it seems.
Yeah. I see that he would have to be completely stripped of absolutely everything and broken completely down to crave and want to control nothing in order to finally have peace. Matter of fact, he's the type of guy you can see in a movie where, you know, his only peace was when actually finally executed him.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. Where it's if he could find that silence, like maybe solitary confinement is like a fucking spa day to somebody like that. You know? I don't know. I mean, where it's like you just got nothing. You got nothing. There's no expectations. It's just you're living to breathe, and that's it.
Yeah, such a broken person.
Yeah. What's your take on the fact that he showed up at the house, allegedly, you know, that was there during that Big Ten game? Is for someone who seemed to take a lot of steps to avoid detection, he still got detected pretty easily. You know, there was the sticker on the window. I mean, come on, you're driving 300 some miles and you think nobody's going to figure this out at some point. I mean, God knows hundreds of cameras. There's probably far more they could have identified him on, but they only needed so many to go, yep, there he is.
8 years of reps of the dam being strong enough to hold back the water.
Yeah.
So it builds that confidence. And what was happening at the very end is that confidence was built that damn wall is going to hold me in. And what's happened is the water got to the top and they had a big wind and starting to spill over the top. I mean, that's why I love this analogy, because that's what was happening. He mm-hmm. was spilling over the top as the dam is starting to crack. And instead of pulling back and saying, well, I'm crazy because this dam is about to go, he was all in. Standing on top of the dam with his arms in the air saying, woohoo, I'm ready. And off it went.
If only he had used Flex Seal.
Oh, we laugh. I should be laughing.
Right. And I say that because I know you use it on
I do. That's why I know exactly what you're saying. I use it on my camper all the time. That's the wonder material.
Exactly. All right, your thoughts in the comment section. Leave them there for us on YouTube or on our Substack. The links are in the description. Love to get your thoughts on this and all the cases that we're following. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us. Take us with you on the podcast platforms. Apple Podcasts, press subscribe there. Leave us a review. We do greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for 10. SpinQuest.com. By American players, for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.